Okay, good. So let us start with the eighth parak. So, right. So we spent 2 days going over the overarching theories of Achila. The sugyas of Achila really dealt with in the eighth parak. The second halacha is very important. But there are a few points that I do want to bring up in the first halacha. Like I said, we'll move to the first halacha I think relatively quickly. But the second halacha is very, very important. No, we will not get to the halacha today. Like I said, we're going to move quickly. We're not going to rush through the first halacha because there are important points I do want to make. But the second halacha, if you remember, most of the quotes from the Rishonim that we saw, or the Achronim that we saw, on whether there's a mitzvah achila, are on the beginning of the second halacha. The second halacha is very important to understand. The first halacha, I think, also, I mean, certain important points. Okay, so let's just start it off. Klal Gadol. Now, of course, I don't have to tell you that this Mishnah is important because, you know, the Mishnah does, right? The Mishnah tells you Klal Gadol. The seventh parak, by the way, also opens that way with Klal Gadol, but the seventh parak is much more complicated, so we may come back to it. But let's see. Klal Gadol Amru B'Shvi'i. There is a great rule in Shemitah. Okay, we do have other prakim. Just in general, when people say parak Klal Gadol, they usually don't mean this parak. They mean, just because it's not as famous as the other Klal Gadol, because people don't learn Shvi'i as much as Shabbat. The seventh parak of Shabbat is also parak Klal Gadol. Klal Gadol Amru B'Shvi'i. There is a great rule in Shemitah regarding Perut Shvi'i, the produce of Shemitah. And that is, Kol Hamiyuchad L'Ochel Adam Ein Osin Mimenu Milugma L'Adam. Correct. Right? Anything which is designated for human consumption is not made into to a band-aid for medicine. Ve'ein tzarech lomar lebehema, and of course it's not going to be used for an animal. V'chol she'enu miyuchad le'ochel adam. Osim imenu milugma le'adam aval lo behema. And that which is not designated for human consumption can be made. V'chol she'enu miyuchad lo le'ochel adam v'lo le'ochel behema. And anything which is not designated as human or animal feed, chishev alav ochel adam veochel behema notnin alav chumrei adam vechumrei behema. So then, if you had in mind that it should be human or an animal feed, then you give them the stringencies of both. Chishev alav leitzim harehu keitzim. If you consider it as wood, as firewood, it is wood, and therefore, we'll see, but probably doesn't have kedushat shvi'it. Kegona si'a ve'ezel ve'ha kurnit. Okay. Now, what strikes you about this Mishnah? Right? What is weird? Well, I don't know what's weird. What is the principle that emerges from this Mishnah that's definitely not obvious? All right, let's tease that. So, okay, good. So we can designate things as, right, we can grant them their status through designation. However, let's sharpen it. And this is why, again, even just in pshat, I think understanding this Mishnah is very important. Can we always do that? No, when can we do it? No, not just by Shvi'ah. What does he say? What things? Yes, right? Right? Things that have multi purposes. Now, why? What does that tell you? Right? What does that tell you? Now, remember, we're not dealing with. One second. One of the things we'll see is that Achila is going to be linked to Kedushat Shvi'it, right? Things that are subject to Achila will have certain limitations in how you can use them, which we call Kedushat Shvi'it, which we have to come back to, what exactly Kedushat Shvi'it is, right? But, now, Ellie. Right, by multi-purpose plans, you define it. But why? Right, so now I want, right, let's think about it in terms of Achila, right? What does, right, why, right, in terms of Achila, what does this tell us? There are certain multi-purpose plants where you define it, but what's the opening rule? Things that Things that are food are always food. Thank you, Kobe. Right? Things that are food are always food. Why? Right? What does that tell you? Where does that come from? What's the logic? Oh, very good. Right? The reason that this emerges is because, right? And if we just look at the Mefarshim here, look at the Marafolda, for example. Marafolda says, well, you know, actually, before you look at the Mefarshim, right? There are multiple statuses here that grant the food a certain, right? A certain importance that require you to treat it in the proper way, right? So what do we have? We have things that are treated as human food, things that are treated as animal food, right? Things that are medicine, things that could be one or the other, depending on how you relate to them, right? What's floating in the background? You tell me that it's obvious when you think about it. Marafolda here tells you, right? Not just Marafolda, Bnei Moshe, pretty much anyone you look at, right? What's floating in the background? Why does this Mishnah make sense? Where's the Mishnah? Right? If you didn't know anything yet, right? You didn't continue into Gemara. You didn't even look at the Mefarshim. I just asked you, here's a Mishnah. You ground it for me logically, textually in the Torah. Where do these categories come from? How does the Mishnah get the idea that there are such categories, that they exist, that they are important? You're getting way too fancy. Very good, right? Look, for example, very good, exactly as Mordechai said, right? As we talked about, right? And again, we talked about this in the last two shiur. Achila is important in Shemitah. It's either a mitzvah, right? According to, again, Marad al-Ghazi. Or it's a mitzvah to ensure that it is eaten rather than to eat it, which is how the Rav Vosner understands the Rambam, right? Or, as we suggested, maybe it's the tam ha-mitzvah, right? It's the philosophy of the mitzvah, right? It may not be a particular mitzvah, but it animates the other halachot. According to Rechov Fisham Perla, it is choosing to eat the food qualifies the ktsira, right? The harvesting, the right, as non-industrial harvesting, right? And then there's the most limited view, right? Which is no, achila is invaluable at all, right? It's just what you're allowed to do with it and not skara. Right? That was the chazanish. Right? That was the chazanish. Right? That's right, yeah. Okay, so let's see where it comes from, and let's analyze it, right? So what's driving the Gemara is clear, right? The Mishnah is clear, right? So if you again look at Marafolda, you can look at anybody, right? Marafolda says Enos inolosam milugma dichtiv vaitasha baraitz lochem leochla. It should be for you for eating, and now what's the right, the drasha here. Well, you know, okay, fine. You know, why am I doing the Marafolda? Let's start the Yerushalmi and come back. Right, right. What does he say? The Gemara says, "Klal gadol amru b'shvi." We say a great rule. So, Rebbon Barchia Baikumi Rabbi Zera, Ochle Adam veOchle Behema Hayu b'Parasha. Right. Right, we're in the section of the Torah. We're in the Torah, meaning the Gemara tells you, how do we see that there is such a thing, that there is a status that we have to now relate to of Ochel Adam, of human food and animal food? How do we know that those are statuses and that they're distinct statuses? Because they get a pasuk. So now he says, Ma chomit meimar Ochle Adam osin mein melugma v'ochle beima osin mein. The ochlei adam eino sin melugma, the ochlei behema osin men melugma. Well, he says, so then what's the difference between them? Now, what's the logic, right? Then before we can get to the answer, what's the logic of its question, right?
What kind of,
well, come on, it's very simple. Before we get too fancy schmancy here, right? Come on.
They're separated things.
Let's do the logic right here. Right? Let's let, I just want to like spell it out, right? Don't get fancy yet, right? Okay. We have this thing called Kedushat Shvi'it, right? Which we haven't analyzed exactly what it means. But for the moment, whatever Kedushat Shvi'it, it means that Shemitah produce should be used for its proper use, right? And what we're focusing on now is Achila. Right? And again, we talked about what mitzvah there might be and how that affects Kedusha. And as we'll see, some people think there really is Kedusha and Shvi'it, and some people think that Kedusha Shvi'it is just another way of saying that you can't misuse it, right? Which is why it's linked to the mitzvah of Achila, right? So these are two sides of the same coin, right? But whatever status is given to the food based on its designation for food, right? Okay. So we know based on the Pesukim, or the Mishnah assumes based on the Pesukim, that since one Pasuk tells you that it should be Lochem Le'ochla, for you to eat, and the next one says, or the next Pasuk, Vayikra Chafei Vav is Uvilahem Techol, Chaya Sheber Tzecha Tiechol Tuata Le'echol. Right? That tells you that whatever this status is that's based on the value of Achila, right? There's a status that applies to human food, and there's a status that applies to animal food, right? And based on what we've been talking about, right, whether you think that the way this works is because there's a mitzvah in it, so now it's problematic to misuse it, or the Chazon Ish, which is the opposite, right, which is you're allowed to eat it, right? There's no mitzvah to eat it, but the fact that you're allowed to eat it, the Torah is telling you that's what's mutter, as opposed to all these other things. Whichever way you take it, what emerges is that there is a status of a human food and animal food, and you are either obligated, all right, there's a mitzvah value, or permitted to do this to the exclusion of other things. But that status is important, right? Because, again, whatever achila is, achila defines the parameters of what you're allowed to do with Kedushat Shvi'it, right, with Shemitah produce. And since the Pasuk explicitly designates that both in the human context and the animal context, both human food and animal food, right, gets this status that cannot be misused, right? Meaning it has to be designated for that, right? Now again, as we noted, the fact that animal food has such a status, right, creates a problem for who? Right? That's why I said the last two shiurim are very important, okay? Right? Let's go through each shita. According to the shita that, like the Maharal Delgazi, that there is a positive mitzvah to eat Kedushat Shvi'it, does the fact that such a status inheres in human food make sense? Yes. Right? The fact that it inheres in animal food, does that make sense? Ma'od kasha. Right? Very, very difficult. Okay? What about according to Rav Vosner? Right, that there's a mitzvah to ensure that Shemitah produce is properly eaten. Okay? Does that make sense that there's a status to human food? Yes. What about animal food? Plausibly. Right? Maybe not so easy. Right? But once the Torah says that that's one of the things you can do, so then you could say, well, what do you mean? Right? Because it's not a mitzvah on the animal. It's a mitzvah on you to ensure that the produce is consumed properly, and the Torah defines animals eating it as. And we have other cases, by the way, that that's true. Right? We have other cases where that's true. Right? Sometimes we specifically have a mitzvah to give something to an animal. Right? Josh looked at me. We do. Like when you see, well, think about it. Right? Like nevela, lekelev tashlechu noto. Right? The Torah actually tells you to throw nevela to a dog. Right? It's a pasuk. Right? Again, what's the nature of that is obvious. But the point is that sometimes the Torah really does do this. Right? Correct. It's a surprise. I'm not saying it's not a surprise, but it's plausible. Right? It can be constructed logically, right? What about according to the Chazon Ish? There is no mitzvah to eat. When we say there's mitzvah to eat, what we really mean is there's a problem with doing sora, and consumption is permitted. So then, no. Because the point is you can't misuse it, and the Torah tells you what's not called misusing. Answer, consumption. Human consumption and animal consumption are both considered not misuses. What is a misuse for the Chazon Ish? Schora. Right? Right? Schora. Right? Now, what about my svara, which is that it's like the tam hamitzvah. So here, I actually think you get. I like my svara, but I think that it helps me at least understand this mishnah, right? Because remember, if I said if it's the tam hamitzvah, right? It's not really a mitzvah, but the point is, all of these mitzvot are meant to ensure that Shemitah gets the proper place, right? It's consumed in the proper way, right? So then, right? I think, right, for humans, it definitely makes sense, right? But what, right? I think it also makes sense in the animal context. Why? Again, this is my suggestion, but why? Because can you give human food to animals? No, you're not allowed to give human food to animals. Right? No, you're not allowed to give human food to animals. No, you can't give human food to animals in Shemitah. Why not? Because remember, it's this way, I think it's similar to the pagan svara. Remember the pagan? Right? What I just said, the unripe fruit. You can't eat them. Why? Because it's not the proper way. But if it were the proper way, then it's fine. Right? Meaning the mitzvah is to maximize... Right? To maximize the achilah in the proper way. So if it's meant for humans, you can't use it for animals. Right? But if it's meant for animals, so that is maximizing it. Right? What makes pagan, right? What makes it usher to eat unripe fruit is that it could have a more maximal one. Right? And exactly. Right? Now, so according to all the svaras, except for the one that is a mamish mitzvah, right? Like active mitzvah, the fact that animal... feeding it to animals grants the food a certain status, I think, is logical, right? It works, right? There's a logic to it, right? But there is, right? But now we have to come back to our mission. Okay, so there's a logic to it, based on the psukim. But now the mission tells you something surprising, which is, okay, there's a status called human food, animal food. But there are two types of animal food, and that is no, right? This is not like huge complicated lumjas, right? There's divided two halves of the mission. The first half of the mission deals with what type of animal food and human food. What is designated as?
Meant?
Meaning what? What does it mean? It's meant for. Yeah, but in the second half. We also talk about that, and we talk, right? What is the difference between the first half, which doesn't put in qualifiers, like if you designate it, and the second half, which does put in qualifiers? No, but it's true for both humans and animals. Come on.
You can't designate it as anything else because it's
very good. Meaning what? This is not complicated lumpen, but I just want to sharpen it, right? There is, you can call it, if you want, you could call it the difference between objective and subjective. If you want it, right? Or if you wanted it, right? But the point is, right, that what the mission is telling you is that when we define these statuses, be careful. Because there are certain things where, again, objective might be the wrong word. Because I'm not sure it's objective. Because there's two things... The first half of the Mishnah either means objective. Well, I'll do it by negation. The first half of the Mishnah deals with things that you don't have the ability to decide whether or not it should be related to as human food. Right? There are different reasons why you might not have the right to define it as something other than human food. One is because the Mishnah assumes that certain things have an objective designation, status. And therefore, who are you to grant it a different definition, right? But there is a less hard possibility, right? Hard is in sense set, right? And that would be, it's not you. It's socially defined. Meaning, you don't get to define it. It is not objective. Right, meaning it's not general, it is subjective, but it's societally defined, and therefore you as an individual,
like, for example,
right, can't.
So, like, for example, if something was used for, like, medicine back in the days,
right, the nafkamina would be right? Can it change if society changes, right? If you think, right, because it's clear, the first category in the Mishnah is that which is not personally defined. That can either be because it's objectively defined or because it's societally defined, right? So I'll give you a mashal from a different area of halacha, okay? The Mishnah in Shabbat, right? And this is, these sugyot are, it's a whole parak actually, right? The schita, let's take schita, okay? There's an issue of schita, squeezing fruit, right? Squeezing fruit. Okay. The Mishnah tells you there are three categories. There are certain fruit that if you squeeze them, you violate an issur d'oraita. There are certain that you only violate an issur d'rabbanan, and there are certain that are mutar l'chadchila. Okay? According to the Mishnah, there are only two things that grow on trees for which you violate schita d'oraita.
Things that aren't meant to be squeezed?
No. Things that are meant to be squeezed. Right? And those are, what are the two things that the Mishnah
grapes.
Assumes? Grapes and? Grapes and? Grapes and?
Olives.
Thank you. Obviously. Yayin v'shemen. Right? Because wine and oil, right, are so important, the squeezing of grapes and olives to make wine and oil is important, and therefore it's chita. Right? Then, so one second. Then the Gemara says that there were things that were relatively common that time, and therefore also midirabana. Okay? The Gemara's example, I don't expect you to know this, is tutin verimonin. Okay? Right? Some sort of berry, right? In modern Hebrew, a tut is a strawberry. It might not be a strawberry, but some sort of fruit, some sort of berry thing, right? And pomegranates. Okay? Pomegranate juice. And everything else, the Mishnah assumes, is mudal chatzila because it's not normal. And therefore, that juice that you would squeeze out, because nobody does it, is not considered juice. It's called zeyabalma. It's like sweat. Right? The fruit sweat. That's the Gemara's very, very nice way of describing it. It's fruit sweat. Okay? Oh. So now, right. So there's a big discussion in halacha, which is, okay, multiple discussions in halacha. One is, are olives and grapes objective or subjective? Meaning, is it just that in the ancient world, like everybody did it, and that's why it's d'oraita? And the question is just, if everybody does it, it's d'oraita. If a lot of people do it, but not everybody's d'rabbanan, it's very rare, it's right. In which case, and maybe you could change, even for olives and grapes, right? Likula, and for oranges, nagid, it could change l'chumra, right? Or do you say that no? Olives and grapes are objective because the Torah, right, gives so much prominence to wine and oil, right? So this, by definition, is schita. And everything else is never going to be d'oraita, right? D'rabbanan, or it's anything which is normal, right? Right? Right, so you have this discussion in postgame, right? Is there objective standard, right? In which case, olives are and grapes are objectively schita, no matter what changes in the world, right? Then there are the things which are societally defined, and in the societally defined things, things can change from mutter to derabanan, from derabanan to mutter, right? But olives and grapes never change. Awesome. Or do you say that the only standard is societally defined? And then there's a little bit of a discussion between Tosfot and Ritva in four different places of exactly the difference between these different categories. Of course, and once you start getting decidedly defined, then you got to figure out, do you mean Jews? Do you mean everybody? Right? And then you got to, right? Once you go for societally defined, you got to be very careful, right? Who do we mean by society? Is it Jews versus non-Jews? Is it geographic or global? Right? Does it depend on subspecies? Right? Right? Like, is there a difference between oranges and juice oranges? Right? Like, you can get all fancy, right? The same question, I think, has to be asked here, right? And right off the bat, the Mishnah doesn't tell you. Right? The Mishnah doesn't tell you if there are certain things which are objectively defined. Like, objectively, like the Torah said it, and it come what may, right? Like, you know, right, meaning, let's say, right, we wake up tomorrow and the entire world would say, you know what, we've been eating wrong, we are all going to go on the keto diet, right, that's it, right, or whatever, right, and that's it. Fruit fruit of animals, right? We don't have it. The sugar content, gewalt, right? We're done, right? The whole world tomorrow, right? Right? So suddenly, every fruit, every grain, every, right? Everything that the macros don't work out to, right? Zell, right? Is animal food, right? Pito, right? Right? Is that, like, right? Is that true? Right? I don't know, right? I mean, the Mishnah doesn't tell you. All the Mishnah tells you is that there is a certain standard that the individual can't define. Right? But it doesn't tell you. Is that because standard one is objective? Right? Like, God said in Gan Eden, here are trees, thou can eat from it. Right? And therefore, fruits are, you know, human being food, and therefore it is defined. Yalla, done. Right? Correct. Fine. Yeah. Yeah. No. I get it. I get it. I understand.
It's the same
right. What?
It's the same.
Okay. But so that's in the ratio, right? The seifa seems to be right. If the first standard is objective slash societally defined, but not personally defined, right? The seifa seems to say, but there are certain things that are either not objectively defined. Right? In either direction. Right? Meaning they're not defined as food or non-food.
Yeah.
Right? They're defined as on the border. Right? And things which are ambiguous, right, are left to subjective design. Right? Right? That seems to be what's going on. Right? Now, of course, you could... Now, it could also be that that's only within a rubric. Right? Right? And this you see by Shchita, right? Going back to the Shchita example, right? You see that there are certain things that clearly, if you are squeezing something, right, you relate to the juice as juice, right? Something that's worth squeezing. And yet, the Mishnah says that certain things, right, still wouldn't be. Right? So even within a subjective context, there does seem to be, right, there does seem to be, right, a certain objective standard, meaning, not or objective. There seems to be a standard outside the individual, right? Meaning, you can't just define something which is not, right? You can't take a tile and say, oh, tile, right? It seemingly, that doesn't work, right? Even though, I mean, yes, rubber at some level comes from a tree, right? Like, that's not how it works, right? There seems to be a certain, right? Ah, right, so that's... Correct. I do, right? But the fact that the Mishnah seems to say, right?
That there's some measure of this.
Correct. Well, because at the end, right, the Mishnah starts getting into, right? And then, yeah, right? There does seem to be a certain, at least societal standard, if not objective standard, right? Which
Wait,
is...
But
so that's the question, right? So that's, right, it's not clear in the Mishnah. Right, so that's the thing. It's not clear in the Mishnah how much, right? Right, that's what I said. What's clear in the Mishnah, I think, is that the Reisha assumes a standard outside the individual, and the Seifa assumes that there are certain cases in which the standard outside the person doesn't definitively define it, but does seem to give the parameters in which an individual could choose, right? But there does seem to be lurking in the background the possibility that something is out of bounds. Now, it's not clear in the Mishnah whether it's out of bounds objectively or subjectively. Right? And of course, look, we know that things do change radically, right? Meaning, look, I think if you told people, forget if you told people in the time of Chazal, if you told people 15 years ago that, what do you mean? Of course we put kale in our juice, right? They would be like, what is wrong with you people, right? That's not, right? I mean, that's disgusting, right? And now it's like, oh, I mean, that's the healthy thing, kale smoothies. God almighty, right? We do weird things. I don't know. And is it possible to turn things that are non-food into food? I mean, it is, right? Like, take vanilla, right? Vanilla, for example. Vanilla. So real vanilla is made from, you know, the vanilla bean. Right? Fake vanilla. You know fake vanilla, artificial vanilla?
Yeah.
Yes. Do you know what it's made from? Yeah, it's basically made from the same thing as petroleum. It's disgusting. I mean, it's disgusting, right? But people, not only at this point do people think it's okay, You understand? Not only is it okay, do you know that... What? No, not just that. Do you know that for in much of the Western world, especially America, when they produce things that are vanilla flavored, when they use real vanilla, they sometimes change the flavor to taste more like artificial vanilla because Americans have this thing that they've gotten so used to the taste of artificial vanilla that they have like problems with the taste of real vanilla beans. I mean, this is psychotic, right? No.
Imitation
vanilla.
No, I'm saying like the vanilla you get
that
vanilla.
No, if it says real vanilla, it's real vanilla. If it says imitation vanilla, it's imitation vanilla. You know the difference? The price tag. Okay?
Yeah, sure.
It's very simple, right? Because real vanilla right now, the price is through the roof.
Well, we got
do you know why the price is through the roof?
Because it's
hard to get.
Not hard. It's more complicated than that. Yes. It's that 2/3 or something of the entire world's vanilla comes from Madagascar, and there was a blight a few years ago in Madagascar, and it will take like 5 years to recover the world thing of vanilla. And that's why vanilla has literally tripled in price over the last few years. Like tripled, because it's not just that it's hard, it's that we've put all our eggs in one basket, Madagascar, right? See? So I told you. Right, so is it possible? So like I was saying, is it possible in theory that something could be totally non-food and we could transform into food? Depends what you think's going on in this Mishnah, right? It depends what you think's going on in the Mishnah. If you think the Mishnah is setting out objective versus subjective, then it's possible that certain things, no matter what would happen, can never be ochel. It's possible that what's the Mishnah doing, setting out, right? Societally, right? Always food, right? And societally maybe food, but it's not subjective versus objective. It's personal versus, right? Versus communal or national or whatever, societal, okay? Right? The nafkamina would be yes. Could we turn the plastic things in, right? Artificial vanilla? Whatever, I mean... McGill, right? And whatever. It's just disgusting.
I've heard that the bottom line of hope for us like has to be like nutritionally beneficial or like some sustenance kind.
Nutritionally beneficial is a very interesting standard.
The bottom line,
I would argue that some of the cereals you have for breakfast doesn't fit that standard.
Right, so it's about it has to have to taste
that. Okay. Okay.
So it
tastes
nutritional benefit. Those are like two things.
I mean, okay.
Either one of those. Because this vanilla stuff probably isn't very good.
No, it's definitely not good for you. You don't eat so much of it.
You love it so much, you know when you make a recipe. We add at least 30 times what the recipe costs for.
I don't know what you're
It's the same chemicals.
Yeah, so we use real vanilla. But, what? Oh, you do? Okay. You want to know the difference? Okay. Here's you can easily tell the difference, okay? When you go home, here's what you do, okay? Go to the supermarket, okay? Buy yourself a pint of Häagen-Dazs vanilla bean ice cream, and then buy yourself like the...
No.
And then buy the $2, like, for a quart of, like, Walmart-flavored... Vanilla? Okay, right, whatever. Taste the difference between those vanillas and you'll know the difference between artificial vanilla and vanilla beans, okay?
Walmart
makes everything Walmart flavored. Yes, exactly. That's the order. Or you could just take vanilla bean or you could get the extract if you really want, but you're not going to have it straight.
Extract,
you can. I mean, it's highly alcoholic, but fine.
Really?
Yeah,
that's what it's made from. It's made from alcohol. That's how you extract. That's the best way to extract it. We're currently making it at home. It's not that hard. Do you know how you make your own vanilla extract at home?
Yeah, we're gonna do that.
Do you know how you do it?
What?
You take vanilla beans and you put it in alcohol, and then you let it sit for 6 months.
Alcohol?
No. Like vodka or bourbon.
Oh.
No. When you go online, they tell you go to the store, buy the cheapest unflavored alcohol you can because it doesn't matter because the taste is coming from the vanilla. Put the vanilla beans in and leave it for 6 months. That's what you did. Yes, that's exactly what I did. I went into the supermarket, I found the cheapest vodka, right? Took a bunch of vanilla beans, put it in, closed the bottle, and put it away for 6 months.
Does it still taste like the alcohol after? Or
just the alcohol still in there?
I mean, it tastes like vanilla because it's overpowering. Yeah, so basically one of our neighbors bought a bunch because she wanted to make vanilla at home, and then she's like, you know what, I'm not going to do it, and just gave it to us, so.
That's so
I mean, they're expensive, but not that expensive. They're not like, it's not like buying vanilla in the store. Anyways. What? Oh, that's expensive. No, Mapitom. Here I saw it for like 8 shekel. Mapitom each.
Oh, really?
It's like $2 each. Come on. Where are you looking?
$2?
Yeah.
Pretty big.
This big.
Oh.
Yeah, like a pod. Yeah. No. That's why it's so expensive. But my point is, right, that, yeah, something like artificial vanilla, which if it has anything that comes from a tree, right, I don't know, right? Okay, fine. But what I wanted to point out, guys, right, what I want to point out here is that what's very clear here in the Mishnah, right, is that this idea of kedushat shvi, whatever it is, right, which again, whether you think it means kedusha or simply it means that there's an obligation to maintain this, right, the edible status of edible food, however you want to formulate it, right, it's clear that what the Mishnah is doing now struggling. It's saying we know from the Pesukim that there are two types of eating, right, that are relevant, right, which again, we've now played it out how it works out to different shita. But even within that, the Mishnah says, but there's, within that, you have to subdivide between that which is defined either objectively or communally, societally, right, and that which is from the objective slash societal point on the border, right, and therefore is up to you to define, as opposed to, like I said by Smita, where there's certain things that are mikot lamachane, right, that they are just, at this point at least, either objectively or societally defined as non-food items, in which case they are not capable of having kedushat shvi'it. In our Mishnah, what do we call that, seemingly? Eitzim. Right? Right? The Mishnah refers to non-food things as eitzim, as mere wood. Right? Right. In the Mishnah, we're talking about eitzim, right? Because the reason is because something that does grow on a tree. Right? And therefore, if it grows on the tree, why is it not a fruit? So the answer is because it's part of the tree. Right? I mean, that's basically the logic of using that particular phraseology. Okay? So then, right, with that, what does the Gemara then ask you? What does the Gemara then ask? Right, what's the logic of Gemara's question? Right? So the Gemara then asks, but wait a second. What is implied, right, by the fact that that which is for, what is implied by the fact that the Gemara distinguishes between Ochel Adam and Ochel Behema? Why is that problematic?
Because once you say that they're separate, you can't say that you can use one from one.
No, well, we'll backtrack. Let's try to get into the Gemara's head. Why is the Gemara assumed there shouldn't be a difference? Because the Torah says lochla for animals and lochla for people. And therefore, there's a certain logic to say that. However we got to this, right, they have the same status, right? What's the logic to distinguish between them, right? Because on the one hand, they're both recognized as legitimate forms of consumption, and yet they're not the same. Why not? But why? Doesn't the pasuk say, "Lochem la'achla," you eat it, and va'achlo, right, and the animals can eat it?
It hasn't been separate.
Okay, good. So what does that imply?
That they're separate.
Why are they separate? Come on, let's play it out. Why are they separate? Good, but why? They were. Why? What does that tell you? Because, as we've talked about, it's not just ochel. What seems to be part of the mitzvah of achila? Yes, exactly. It's the proper way of eating it, maximizing the achila, like we saw by pagan, right? Because if you said the whole point is that to be consumed, so once you say the animal consumption, human consumption, both count, so then it shouldn't make a difference. But if you say, no, what's the point? Whatever the consumption, however you formulate the mitzvah, part of its definition is proper way, maximally effective consumption, right? So then there's a difference. Can you understand why right? Like I said, I don't want to spend a million years in the first halacha, but I want you to understand that what the Mishnah is doing, there's a, right? Even without going to any mafarshim, there's a very, right? There's a very, there's sort of an intuitive logic here to what the Mishnah is doing, right? There's an intuitive logic to this series of halacha. Yeah? Okay. So then the Gemara asks, right? What's the Gemara's question? So the Gemara says, wait a second. They're both in the Parsha. Right? Think about the Gemara's question. They're both in the Parsha. Gam ochle adam ochle veima ba parasha. They're both in the Parsha. Which means what? That both human consumption and animal consumption for these purposes counts as proper consumption. Right? Right? So the Gemara says, if that's the gate, machamit meimar ochle adam. So what's the logic? So what is more answer? It should be for you to eat. Mi'ut. What does that mean?
Limits.
Limits, right? Limits. It excludes. What does it exclude? Mi'et ochle adam ein osin mehen milug. Okay? It's telling you what? Right? So how does the drasha work? Explain to me the drasha. How does the drasha work? Good. So I think one way of taking it would be the way that Kobe takes it, which is lachem means it's for people. Lachla means to eat it. The Rambam takes it slightly differently, okay? The Rambam in the Perusha Mishnah takes it as follows. The Rambam says, you don't have this in the back, right? So he says like this. Lochem le'ochla, hamyuchad lochem, hu sheye lochem le'ochla bilvad. Okay? This is a very fancy drasha, right? I'll read it one more time, okay? Tell me if you can get what the Rambam's getting. Lochem le'ochla, lochem le'ochla, hamyuchad lochem, hu sheye lochem le'ochla bilvad. It's that which is for you is limited to be for you as food.
So it cannot be for you, not for food.
No, be careful. Because what's the halacha that Gemara is trying to explain? That animal, watch, listen to this logic, right? The Mishnah says, human food, produce that is meant as human food can only be used as human food. Produce that is meant as animal food can either be animal food or human medicine.
It cannot be used as food.
But cannot be human food. Right? Right? Presumably, right? Right? So how's his drasha working? Lochem le'ochla. That which is for you as food, right? Or that which is, I mean, what is it? This is how the Rambam seems to believe it. Shemitah is given for you to benefit. That which is designated for you, for human beings, is for you only as food.
So it's not maximizing benefit. So
right, so human, exactly. So human food, the maximum, right, is maximized by being human food. Animal food is maximized by either being animal food or human medicine.
What you said, I think, is simpler.
Right? Okay? Right?
Something that is designated for more.
So, the Gemara isn't even dealing with it here, right? So we'll hold the thought for a second, okay? So the Gemara says, the Gemara now asks a question, which is, Umbeye ochlei behema. Right? I don't understand. What are you talking about? That makes no sense. Why does that make no sense? Because achilat behema, what does it also say? Leochla. Right? Right? I mean, whatever, I understand. I mean, it's what, basically the point is they both say le'ochla. So therefore, either both le'ochlas include other things or they don't, right?
Well, of course, the maximizing thing on the one that's maximizing.
Yes, but...
From the fact that it says achla by both of them means that it probably comes with...
So, right, so this is what the Gemara is trying to figure out.
This isn't maximizing if you do that.
It's for this,
it's not for...
Good. So, what is it going to answer? So, Amar Rabbi Bon Bar Chia, Kol Midrash at Doresh Vishover, Midrash Rishon in the Midrash. What does that mean?
You can't extend the contradiction to the first discussion.
Correct. Exactly. Right. Once you have a drasha, you can't then have an immediate drasha which breaks the first drasha. Right, because what you would be right, because the first drasha is on the first pasuk, which tells you that there's something unique about human food, which is that it can only be used as food. Okay. Right, if the same was true of animal one, then by making that drasha on the second pasuk, it would break the uniqueness that was implied by the first pasuk. Right.
Why do we need uniqueness?
What?
Why do we need uniqueness? What does that matter?
Well, I just want to get. Right? This is just what it seems to, right, say. Right? Right? That you can't make a drasha like that. Right? Now that's a little bit weird, admittedly.
Wait, but what was this going to be more offensive than this idea of animal?
Right, which is, I don't understand. We have the same phraseology about animal, so therefore, either neither of them can be used for medicine or both of them can be used for medicine. Not clear, right? Correct, not clear. Right, not clear, right? Meaning it's not clear, not 100% clear. Correct, right? It's not totally clear what we're talking about in that sense. You are right. So now, right, now, this is basically the way we've read it so far is the way most of the Mefarshim more or less read the Gemara until this point. There is an exception, though. If you look at the Gra, right, the Gra has a different girsa. Because he wrote two different Perushim. Yeah, but so he has a different girsa, right? What is his girsa? Right, he thinks that the drasha is not from Lochem, right? What does he think the drasha is from? La'achila. But he thinks it's very simple. The drasha goes like this. You have to eat it, not use it for medicine. And then what's the Gemara's kasha, according to the Gra? It's very simple. Right? Because the problem is we're trying to figure out, right, what's going on, right? But according to the Gra, it's very simple. L'achla means, what you have to do is, the purpose of Shemitah food is to eat it. So you have to eat it. Then you can't use it for medicine. And the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Right? If you have to eat it, then you can't make it for medicine. And it says l'achla, right? It says you should eat it both by human beings and animals. I think Mara's weird answer then is, yeah, but we already darshened it uniquely for human beings. You can't say it about animals also. Now, that's not fully satisfying, so continue with the Gemara. What does the Gemara then say? Rabbi Yossi lo amar ken. Rabbi Yossi offered a different explanation. What did he say? He doesn't like it. He says no. Ella, vaita shabara aretz lochem le'ochla. Meat. The land is for you to eat, and that is a meat. That's a limitation. Lecha ula'avdecha ve'lamatecha. For you, your servant and your maidservant. Tiyechol tuata le'echol. Miut. Right? It's another miut. It's another exclusion. And what's the rule? Miut achar miut lirabot. When you have two negatives in a row in halacha, what do you get? You get a positive, an inclusion. Right? Namely, that you're allowed to use animal food for human medicine and not human food for human medicine. So now the Gemara says, I don't understand. V'rabe ochle adam. Right? I'm doing the gears of change here, but he says, well, once you say that two negatives make a positive, why don't you just say that the double negative tells you that even animal food can be turned into human medicine. So the Gemara answers, Kai da'amma Rabbi Bon Bar Chia, kol midrash adoresh v'shover midrash v'yishon ein ze midrash. Again, you can't break a first drasha with a second drasha. So, Amma Rabbi Matanya, kishemiyata ochle adam yata, u'kishiribta ochle behema ribta. And he says, no. Its limitation excluded human food, and its inclusion included animal food. Now, the drashot, I'll be honest, are a bit hard to parse, right? To figure out what exactly the difference is. But leaving aside the exact drasha, you want to give me a svara? What's the svara for saying that once we exclude medicine, right, we're only going to say that human food can't be made into human medicine, but animal food can be either made into animal food or animal medicine? What's the logic?
Because you're maximizing it.
You're maximizing it, right? Look at the Rosh Cirilio, who says something sort of like this. Look at the Rosh Cirilio. He says, look four lines from the bottom. Got it? Klomar, mi'atita, klomar, yeah?
Yeah.
Klomar, evi shabir mi'at vein l'raboto. V'im tafzor v'tarba ochle adam limen lukma v'nim sechover. Right, if you were to go back and include human food, so then you'd break the original drasha. Avo riboy ochlem demehem evi shabir riboy vein l'shabir. But he says, but including animal food doesn't break the logic of the drasha. Okay, so here he gives you a logic to the drasha. Okay, the drasha is a little bit weird, but he gives you the logic. And he says, "Dishaini ochle adam dechashive." Human food are different because they are chashuv. Umilugma heve bizoya. And medicine is therefore a degradation. The ochle behima l'milugma l'adam chashivuhu. But for animal food to be made into human medicine, that's an upgrade. Ukmo ochlen de behema le behema, just like animal food for animals. And now he has another logic, right? He adds one more line, which is thank you. Look at all these bugs. Okay, but let's just look at the last line of the Rosh Cirilio. Thank you. What does he say? What does the Rosh Cirilio say? Sorry. What does the Rosh Cirilio then say? Last line. De behema gufa Tashmish da Adam Hu. And here's his brilliant last line. He says there is an internal logic to it. Because Behema is also... Ah. Right? He says it's not just maximizing. You're right. Part of this part is maximizing. Right? But he said there's more to it. Which is that he says at the end of the day, why is Achilat Behema counted? Because animals are used by humans. So therefore he says, here's the logic. The highest level of usage is human eating. The second one is either human benefit of a lower level or one step removed human benefit. So animal food is already, it's benefiting a person at two steps removed. But you can, right, basically what he says is it's in, there are two interchangeable ways of maximizing the status of Ochlei Behema, which is either using it for medicine, which is, well, it's either using it as animal food, which is maximizing it for an animal, which is one step removed from human beings, or giving it to human beings, but as benefit level two.
Well, by that logic, couldn't I say, like, the same amount of fiber like my servants also?
No, because they're human beings. Last I checked. Correct, but they're also independently human beings.
Well,
right?
That's not what has to do with the fact that when I feed my animal,
it also benefits. No. It's that it becomes defined as human benefit. Right? What is the Rosh Aurelio really getting at? According to Rosh Aurelio, all the standards really come down to what? Human consumption. Right? That according to him, there's really one standard is what the, right? That the not eat it. No, the standard created has to be used in the way that maximizes uses human consumption. And there's two ways of doing that. The highest level for him is human eating. But if it can't be human eating, it's right, then it can be used for either
human medicine,
which is human consumption of a secondary level, or for animals, which it's one step removed, but the animals benefit the human beings. Right? That the drasha tells you they're interchangeable, yes.
So then, therefore, if you have something designated as human medicine, it can only be used for human medicine and animal food.
It went the other way around, right? You're turning it into medicine, right? And therefore, it can't come from human food, because human food is food, right?
Yeah,
it's the highest level, right?
So what this is saying is, like, if something, I'm not sure if this is like that, but if something is grown for the sake of human medicine,
so according to this logic, presumably yes, right? According to this logic, right, you would assume that if it was grown for human medicine, it could be interchangeable with animal food, right? Possibly, right? That seems to be the rationale of does the equation, right? Okay, fine. Again, like I said, we're not rushing through this halakha, right? It'll probably take us 2 to 3 days to get through the halakha, right? But I think it's important to realize the logic of what's going on, right? And why this is important, right? Because all we did in the last 2 days was say that our mitzvah of achila. But now what you see is, okay, but what are the implications of achila being important, right? And what exactly is the achila we're talking about, right? And are they the same? Just because achila adam and achila behema are mentioned, right? All that, again, is in the background of defining the nature of Shemitah produce. And again, there is a certain logic to go to the seventh parak first, but like I said, the eighth parak is a little bit easier than the seventh parak. Okay.
Was it when it was on the tree that, like, he's like, okay, I'm going to be using this for...
We're going to get to that. That's the second half of the Gemara here. Did you get in the second half of the Gemara?
No.
Ah, so what you're going to see is that the big question of the second half of the Gemara is going to be, right, these mid-level things. Let's say, right, the whole Dion in the second half of the Gemara is very interesting. Right, I want you to see it partially because it's interesting for Shemitah and partially because it gives you insight into a classic sugya in the Zikin. But also I'll just tell you what the second definition of the Gemara is about, which is, okay, what if the seller has one thing in mind and the buyer has something else in mind? Who gets to define it and at what point?
Yeah.
Right? Okay, good. Fine.